Welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast, the global mini golf podcast. Hear from some of the best players in the sport. Look ahead to some of the biggest tournaments and have a chance to win some amazing prizes. And now your hosts, Andrew Edmonds and Simon Brown.
Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, is my good friend and co-host. You are never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello. It's good to be back. How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. I'm excited for today. We've got someone on. We've spoken to him before. He helped us recap November. But today is going to be all about him and his illustrious career, shall we say. We've been trying to talk to him for a very long time.
Yeah, this could have been six episodes. We haven't even done this yet, and I know it could be six episodes. I just hope we do this fantastic gentleman some justice.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to have to try and pick out the best bits out of a very long and interesting career. Just before we invite our guests onto the podcast, we just got time for my favourite part of the episode, which is where we thank our Patreon supporters for their help in us making this podcast. So thank you very much, champion of the podcast, Sevi Kukialka. And if you yourself would like to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/54problems, and we'll put that link in the description of the show. So joining us today, we've got an absolute legend of the sport. Each and every one of the players for UK mini golf will know him. I'm sure he's known globally as well. Please welcome back to the podcast, Ted McIver. Hello, Ted.
Hello, Simon. Hello, Andrew. And hello. Thank you for inviting me on.
Well, thank you for coming back. It's great to have an opportunity to dig into your career a little bit.
Exhume me, in some words, from the cemetery of old mini golfers.
Well, we wouldn't say that, but sure. So what we'd like to do today is maybe go back to the beginning of your career, have a little bit of a chat about what mini golf looked like then and how it was different, and perhaps some of the notable tournaments you've been involved in along the way. And then have a look at some of the pieces of mini golf media that you've been involved with, because there are a few classics out there. You co-authored a book. There's a television show that you were in and a documentary about your performance in Team GB. And then once we've done that, we will take on the famous getting to know you questions. OK, so let's maybe start at the beginning then. You started playing competitively in 1998, I believe. Is that right?
No, it was it sort of started where I was thinking about this the other day, back in the sort of later 90s. We used to, on a Sunday, it was almost perfect, with a roast dinner at my mother's, then go and play football with some friends, then we go to the pub, have a couple of drinks, then we go and play crazy golf down on the seafront. And then in the evening, I played Dungeons and Dragons. So that was almost, as Lou Reed would say, that was almost, that was the perfect day. And the course up at Clambers opened, and we played there a few times. And Tim Davis back then was joining in playing. And so our astonishment, we heard that there's a tournament going on involving international players. Some players from Austria were going. But unfortunately, we only found that out the day after the tournament. This was in 1999. So, yes, we could be saying our debuts, both myself and Ace Man, our debuts would have been in September 99, but sadly, we missed it by one day. So it wasn't until 2000. Again, Tim had been researching mini... I think we just... A lot of people do this, that play crazy golf, and then when they're bored, they put something into the search engines to see if there's any crazy golf. And to our astonishment, there was such a thing as the British Miniature Golf Association, which Peter Parr had started. So actually, my first tournament was meant to be at Tunbridge Wells, but in his first outrageous and audacious piece of gamesmanship, Tim drove up to it on his own, leaving myself and this other guy, Mark Spry, who was going to go. And then later on, he claimed the thing to say that he thought we were making our own way up there. It didn't help because I found out that he actually went there and won the tournament. So it wasn't till another month that we made our way up the South End on sea, playing the British Masters. And that was quite an astonishing thing because Sky Sports were covering it as well.
Wow.
I think it was the first time they played at the South End, and the course had pulled out all the stops. So there must have been possibly 40 odd people playing. Mm-hmm. Most of them I never ever saw again. They even managed to get the mayor of South End to turn up to present it. And again, a Sky Sports film crew followed all the action, which they made into like a 4-minute comedy piece. Complete with sort of fairground music and clown noises. It wasn't the most either respectful piece that you could have, but it was certainly a baptism of fire playing with a Sky Sports team filming you.
Yeah, so if that was at Southend, which of the courses was that on? Was that the Arnold Palmer on the seafront?
It's quite embarrassing. People ask you, what was it on? And we have to say it was on the Peter Pan adventure course.
Right.
Just down from the pier where Laurel and Hardy used to play at the sort of start of their careers.
And this perfect day then that you would do regularly, finishing with Dungeons and Dragons, when you were playing just for fun there, would that have been on the Hastings, the Arnold Palmer crazy course?
Yeah. On the crazy course, and then I think when Clambers opened, was it 98? We started going up there more regularly as well, mainly because they didn't get as many crowds up there. And it's
right.
A lovely course. There was a bit of a rule that Tim introduced, though, that is that if on the lucky 19 you aced it, you had 6 shots taken off your score.
Ooh, spicy. Okay.
Bit of a local rule that seemed to benefit him quite a bit.
Is this more gamesmanship from Tim Ace Man Davis? This is
very
more
possibly,
examples
very
of his gamesmanship. Okay.
It has stood me in great shape over the years, with especially when we play at the World Crazies and everyone's watching, and you can hear people possibly shouting abuse at you as well as you're going around. That you can just.
Yes.
Filter it all out. He used to love shadows as well. Sometimes when you were putting, you'd make the shape of a shadowy spider trying to gobble up your ball as you're about to putt it. So yeah, it worked wonders in just closing, just focusing on the ball, the hole, and ignoring him sort of trying to get into your eyes line of sight or dropping his putter.
So going back to that point about the millennium for mini golf, who would we still know? Who has lasted the course since then?
Back then, it was fierce competition amongst the Valerie family. Robert Valerie was the winner at Southend. Joe Valerie was the top British player at the Clambers. They combined the British Open with the British Championships. So there'd be a winner, overall winner, and then there'd be the top British player playing. And of course, there's Steve Valerie playing, who with a bit of serendipity, has turned up again as the man who laid the felt for Gloucester Aces at Seve's course at Gloucester.
Yeah, he's a fantastic set of calves. He's well cut out to build a course, man. Yeah.
Who else was there? Simon Tonner, who disappeared shortly after Southend, and I think we're possibly only name people might know is Peter Parr, who of course had started the BMGA, and Lionel Bender was playing as well, who lasted quite a while into the noughties, playing Margate a few times as well. We had some great. My own memory, off the top of my head, was we did this quiz in Margate at the Nayland Hotel. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions in it was a photo round, which was orgasm or not. And you had 10 photographs. You had to say whether or not it was a picture of someone having an orgasm or not. Well, it was just scored a goal at football or something. So, and Lionel seemed... answered all the questions and I think got 8 of them right.
That's pretty good.
Which was great, but also somewhat disturbing. an idea for mini golfers now when they celebrate their hole in one for next year.
East Collar orgasm. Yeah. And this is why we don't have Chapman on. This is why we don't invite Mark Chapman on.
Or if it's a golfer thing, it could be a foregasm, couldn't it?
Oh, that's that's the title of our new competition.
Is it a four or is it a gasm?
Ted, so you really getting into it in 2000s then, at Southend.
We've got another 22 years to go. So,
strap in, everyone.
Southend was the first tournament I played. Sadly, it wasn't like that all the time with 40 players playing and Sky Sports covering it.
So in the early 2000s, then, you're getting more and more into the game, playing more and more tournaments. Can you take us back and sort of describe what a tournament would look like back then and perhaps some of the differences from then till today, maybe what's improved, what was better before? What do you think when your mind goes back to playing in the early 2000s?
Certainly, in terms of the tournaments, there weren't that many. I think it'd be possibly 3 or 4 in a year.
Okay.
At the start, they were mainly in the southeast. Then there was, we had one up in Stratford, which was on a fantastic course there, where we had in the end stage the British Open up there as well. It always felt a little bit, there wasn't an executive committee, it was just really the one man running it. And some of the formats were a bit odd as well. There was the British Open one year had, it was almost like a World Cup where you had groups of four and then the top one went through to the next one.
Okay.
Ended up with, so it wasn't actually done in a stroke play, added on to stroke play. So, yeah, there were some different formats going on. We started the club championships up at Dorridge as well, which we had a nice weekend playing Dorridge and playing over at Stratford. I remember as well the Exel brothers all appearing one year, and God bless them. We're still in touch. Even on Facebook, I'm still in touch with all of them, really. But they certainly added a bit of colour to the scene.
Sure.
There used to be a newsletter that came out as well. Peter would put together with sort of stories and he used to do the write-ups for the tournament and post it out. They're like a year's review, so we'd post it out at the end of the year. But I think mostly it was the all-consuming rivalry between myself and Tim Aceman Davis.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about that then. So before you even started playing in tournaments, you were friends with Tim and you took this rivalry across into tournament play.
I used to be a lodger as well.
Okay.
Three years or 4 years. Strangely, just before we started playing crazy golf.
You said he's notorious for some questionable gameplay.
He's very much into Stephen Potter one-upmanship. Anyone who's ever seen that, there's a film that was based on it as well, starring Terry Thomas. And it's just completely forgotten what the name of the film was now. But that sort of followed that whole idea of one-upmanship and sort of bending the rules in your own and using a bit of psychology, reverse psychology. So, yes, he was very, very much into that.
But then despite Tim's best efforts, perhaps, it didn't take you long to get your first win in the tour. It looks as if that was in your second year. Was that about 2001?
I say the Southend event became a regular feature.
And it was either the British Championships or the Masters. It was one of them.
I think it was the British Championship was the first one, again up at Clambert's, where it was actually quoted in the local paper, and I had the phrase, "My putter was on fire." A nice headline. So when we became regular features in the back page of the Hastings Observer, mainly because we wrote the stuff and sent it into them anyway. Except nice. Tim became a much more regular feature in there than me, because he tended to try and write his own articles before I managed to do it. And obviously put the slant in his own favour as well.
And that's how you get the press on your side, just write the articles yourself. That's a good idea.
So what's your memories of the championships at Hastings then? I take it that was a major back then?
It was still just a one-day event. Three rounds, I think. Yes, because I was still playing with a metal putter then and a couple of golf balls. But it was one of those rounds where everyone knows when you do a hit it and everything was falling in place. And there's one great hole where you have to play it up a slope. Back then, because a lot of natural features there was used, they had an artificial waterfall. So if you got it over the bridge, you went down to it's on a three-tier hole. So if it go up over the water, over the bridge, down to the bottom, you have a two. But if you deviated from that, you could end up in the water where it sort of rushed the ball down over a waterfall onto a second tier, which was quite a tricky putt. Also, sort of the Niagara Falls effect with the ball like a barrel going over the top. So, yes, it was quite a petrifying one. And I got to my gratification, I went over it, whereas Tim's ball ended in the water and was swept away to his doom and its doom. So, yes, that's still fond memories of seeing that. I'm trying not to smirk. Sometimes it is difficult not to smirk. You just try and put your concerned face on and go, "Oh dear, dear, that was a bit of bad luck." But that's not what you're thinking, really, is it?
I'm surprised that you and Tim were so tactful with each other. I would have thought you'd be laughing openly at each other when things like that happen.
I think you can't laugh too much. You've still got to concentrate on your own game as well. Sure. But once the 18th hole was out of the way, then yes, we could then fully eviscerate the other.
Yes, mock sincerity aside, you went on to have quite a long association with Clambers, I believe. Would you like to speak more about what happened with you at that course?
Yes. In 2007, Ted Skelton, sadly no longer with us, but a great guy and really supportive of mini golf. His health was failing, so we had the opportunity to, as he stepped down, of taking over the course and running it ourselves on a sort of profit-sharing basis with the owner. We actually had the chance to sit in that hut and live the dream of being, running the course. So back then we printed out our own scorecards. Mm. We had our own, people could pay a certain amount and then they could play a round for £2. And practice as much as we could. And Tim, it was, as I mentioned, it was built into, it used to be where the old model village. So sometimes when we're digging things, we'd unearth part of a tractor or a farmer smoking his pipe or a bit of a Jacobean house front. And the water features that were there was still being designed as part of the course. But it was a beautiful course, certainly. A couple of times I saw woodpeckers down pecking away at some ants. We had a fox asleep on hole 16 once when I came out. which I think if you remember earlier, I said we used to play there originally because the public didn't go up there much, and which was great to play, but when you're running the it's a business, it's a bit of a worry having snoozing foxes on there at 4 in the afternoon. But yes, it was just a delight. Yeah, I still fondly think when I opened it up in the morning, put the flags out, got the leaf blower out, blew it away, got the kettle on, sat down by the pond, sipped away at my drink, waited for the first customer, and then just watched the water snails slowly float along from side to side. But of course, it's not wasn't always honey and marmalade back then. There were days when it was pouring with rain, and the heavens opened, and we just stuck in a hut looking at the water, the rain, which is where we came around to the idea of writing a book in our spare time. The other pain was people used to come up for the ice creams. So we used to go to Lidl's and buy boxes of ice creams and sell them individually.
Nice. Can we add that? I think that's illegal, isn't it?
It is, but... I think we can. This is the first exclusive you've got in this this interview, but yeah, a lot of people would just come up not really to play mini golf, but just to sit outside, eat our ice creams, and just they'd also just sit up there and enjoy, presume it's a sunny day, the sort of ambiance, and of course you had a view out across the sea as well from one side.
I think there may be a statute of limitations that makes this permissible. I'm hoping.
You hope so, yeah. I'd hate for the police to show up at Ted's house because of a podcast and illicit ice cream selling. It'd be a bit embarrassing in prison to have to tell that story.
Fitting end.
Yeah.
That would be.
You mentioned the book there. So this is Nutters with Putters.
Yeah.
And on this... on this podcast, I'm sure you're aware, Ted, we've had a couple of doctors of sports psychology that have written about the psychology of playing golf. But perhaps you and Tim were the very first, or at least before them, to write about the psychology of playing golf or on mini golf. I've got my copy here. I can just read out a couple of my favorite pieces. So this is from the 2008 book co-authored by Ted, Nutters with Putters.
Yeah, so that's another thing, the co-authoring bit was Tim stuck that in there, but I actually wrote about 80% of the book. But that's about to say the boring classic bits are the bits he put in.
Yeah, well, you can't actually tell when you read the book who wrote which, you know, who wrote which bit. It's a little bit difficult to tell. Sometimes I imagine it in your voice. But yeah, you can't really tell, but it's interesting. Okay, you wrote 80% of it. Here are two of my favourite quotes, okay?
Yeah.
The sport of mini golf has many subtleties and numerous hidden facets, but overall... probably the most useful skill to master is being able to hit the ball in a straight line. It's a good one. Very true. And this quote, don't forget to practice your swagger in front of the mirror. Swirl and twirl your golf club as if it were a ceremonial saber or the flashing putter of Zorro. So lots of good advice in the book.
Yeah, I bet going. One of the things Tim had was sort of created an aura, which he, I think, of invincibility. So he always imagined that, especially match play or something like that, that he would sort of swagger to the first hole. And a lot of the people, I think back, you think back when teams used to go to Old Trafford or before that, Anfield, some of them sort of felt they were going to lose anyway. But something that Tim liked to sort of project that he was. He had complete confidence in himself in winning. And, those other people playing, he used to say, well, do you think you're going to finish second today? which one of you do you think is going to be second? So, yes, that did work in a psychological way with the decade he was playing, that some players did go out to play with the thought that, Tim's playing, he looks on form. Look at the way he's standing there, confidently moving his putter around, smirking at me. winking. And yeah, although your knees aren't knocking, but sort of mentally you're sort of sweating mentally with fear. And of course, the fact that he always wore the same smelly tracksuit bottoms also, you sort of dreaded being in a group, not only the sort of losing to him, but also the wind's blowing the wrong way, the smell was obviously off-putting as well.
So, Ted, this rivalry with the Ace Man was so famous, or infamous maybe, that even Channel 4 made a show about it. For our international viewers who may not know, Channel 4 in the United Kingdom, I think, is one of our very, very best television channels. So you get four TV channels for free. I think Channel 4 is really the very, very best. They always do innovative, creative shows. So this show, Grudge Match, was about your rivalry with Tim Davis and going head to head with him. What was the experience like there of working with Channel 4 and making that show and then seeing it on the air?
It was great fun. The producer got it. I mean, some of the other episodes they did as well, I'll just give an example. They had table football, and they also had tractor pulling, so it was like quite a diverse range of sports they had back then. But yeah, it was great fun to do, and it was also coincided with the first ever World Crazy Golf Championship as well. But that was played on the old, it was split over two courses. There's the old mini golf course, which one of your old guests, Passy, would sort of remember it quite well, because it was a fearsome course to play, especially if the wind got up. Some of the holes are very long, and the plateaus are quite difficult. You'd play one round on that and one round on the crazy, and then back onto the mini. But yeah, it was great fun to follow us both around. I'm sure there's probably enough footage there for a half-hour show. But it ended up being repeated about for those students, university students or insomniacs or people who do night shifts.
Yeah.
A lot of people were watching at 3 o'clock in the morning. I remember once I was just having a drink with a friend in Broccoli, and somebody came up to me and goes, "Hi," he said, "Oh, you were on TV last night." That doesn't happen often, but it was quite nice to have that. But obviously the ending of Grudge Match was a bit disappointing in that I came a cropper on the rotating water mill at Tim won. But yeah, I still watch it now and then, and we've got the smile to watch it.
Yes, and we'll post it in our show notes as well, so people who can watch it, I highly recommend it. It's an absolutely fantastic show. You mentioned the first World Crazy Golf Championship. Then it actually surprised me to hear it was played over two courses. Do you have any other memories of that? Because obviously it's a huge, huge tournament today.
I remember you always imagine yourself being in the final group in the lead going out.
Yeah.
And I was. But at the time, there was a 7-year-old Olivia Popakova was playing. And unfortunately, the local crowd, rather than getting behind their local player, all cheering the girl on.
Ugh, that is annoying. Yeah.
Me, Tim and Olivia. And I still not only remember, but the sound of the water wheel clang as my ball hit it. For those who don't know, it's as it rotates, there's two of the wheel, how do you describe it? There's two bits of wood on the rotating wheel, which if you play the ball at the wrong time, it will hit that wood and not go through the rest of the time.
Tell you what, it's a bit like. It's a bit like a water mill, isn't it?
Water mill one, yes. It's the water mill. And, a couple of times, it was metal as well at the time, so it just, this awful clang as the ball hit it. But I used to do it not once, but I think three times, because I just sort of lost my mind. In the end, I think Tim won, and I MS managed to scrape together second place, but it was quite an experience playing that, obviously with the TV crew again, but also the great and good of Hastings all gathered around us to see what on earth's going on.
Yeah, it's actually a fascinating watch. And aside from watching Ted and getting to see what Tim was like, to see how the course we love has aged and changed over the years, and also have it interspersed with the second course, it is fascinating. And if nothing else, seeing such a young Olivia and knowing what she's went on to do in the game, it's insane how small she is in that video. I can't imagine any child coming and competing in any mini golf tournament of that size. Never mind something of profile with cameras. Yeah, it is quite a watch.
Yeah, she went on to win twice in the end, in the coming years at the World Crazies.
Okay, one of the last bits of mini golf media I'd really like to get your thoughts on. Simon in the past has shared that his favourite piece of mini golf media is the Perfect 18 movie, a sort of animated short film about Rick Baird's Perfect 18 on Putt-Putt. And it is a fantastic, fantastic film, I have to say. I think, though, my personal favourite piece of mini golf media is Mini Golf, the mini movie about the Team GB, about the Great British Mini Golf Team, playing on a Etnet course, which is unfamiliar to them abroad. And I think it's fair to say, trying to avoid last place. Can you talk a little bit about that, Ted? Because it's my favourite thing, honestly. What was the tournament? What were you doing? Where were you playing? What was the experience like? What did you think of the documentary in the end?
Okay, we actually had its preview in one of the independent cinemas in Hastings Old Town.
Oh, okay.
So we had Jamie Johnson, the guy who filmed it and produced it and directed it, came and he played some of his other short films. He had a sort of Q&A. And then put on the main event. It was great, so I got to do a speech there as well, much to everyone's enjoyment. Okay. The experience as well was a great opportunity to travel. I went into Budapest, had a couple nights there, and travelled on to Timișoara, where the competition was going to take place.
Where's this, sorry?
In Timișoara, Romania.
Okay.
And, it was just a mad experience. We had a great team at the time. Maybe not as much in ability, but in camaraderie and humour. Sadly, we lost him this year, but larger-than-life character who was the British coach, Thomas Seiniger, who was a great figure of fun. And I was sharing a room with him as well. But it was... The hotel itself was remarkable as well in some things that were going on there. There's a basement area that certainly was a lively place to go to, in terms of what was happening down there. There's a lap dancing club and private dancers, and I think the word seamy would describe it quite closely. And they also had some Miss Timișoara competition on as well going on down one day, which was televised live on whatever it was, Timișoara TV or whatever the area. And meanwhile, as you say, the British team were wrestling with this course and everyone was trying not to finish last. I'd escaped being last once when a Finnish player had been stung by a wasp.
That was a good bit of good luck for you.
The poor fellow, although he had to retire, did me a favour in that I wasn't last there. And I skirted with last place as well, I think, in Armunda. But again, rather like Coventry in the 80s, I was scraping about. And it didn't help when Thomas ripped my notes up in a famous part of this documentary. But it came to that I needed I think I was two away from last. It's like four holes to go. I just had to get, I think, twos and I'd be all right. But it was one of the trickiest holes to get to. And just as I was going to play the shot, the heavens opened and play was stopped. It was like 2 hours to go. So then I came back to play the shot. And I think everyone else had finished, I think. So Thomas was there right at the... I'd like Tim right in my eye line. And it's like trying to encourage me, like pounding away at there. As well as the hole that went up a slope and you had to sort of get it in the top bit.
Yeah, you have to weight it so it stops at the top of the slope, right?
Because we started thumping the side of the hole and then grinning maniacally at me. And I think I got seven. So that was it for me. It was, at least he couldn't rip my notes up because I'd already done that. But he had his disappointed face on, and so did I. So I had to trudge back to the closing ceremony, which... Again, was great fun. I do recall that it there's quite a lot of beer and wine served at that. But yeah, the whole event was brilliant. And I remember Thomas gave me a lift back to Budapest as well, which where I experienced his driving for the first time, long distance driving, which was almost as scary as trying to putt on that hole 14.
So, Ted, are you ready for some quick fire questions?
Fire away. Hopefully, though, my putter's not on fire, my tongue is. So let's get going.
Then this is Getting to Know You.
Getting to Know You.
Ted, do you have a mini golf nickname? And if so, where did it come from?
I do. In fact, weirdly, it's a nickname of a nickname.
Okay.
I've been called Ted since I was at school, only because at the time I looked like a teddy bear.
didn't know that's why you're called Ted. Okay.
briefly in the 80s, I had another nickname as well. So I not just had one nickname. There was a famous soap opera in the UK based in the East End of London, the Queen Vic pub. And for those of who remember soap operas of the 80s, there's a character called Lofty who had round glasses and spiky hair, much like myself. And many an occasion I'd be walking down the road and people would sort of shout out a car at me where they'd say, "Oi, Lofty, how's Shell?" And for those people who remember EastEnders, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. However, Ted is a nickname that really sort of stuck with me. And we're back again to five-a-side football, where back then my brittle bones weren't fracturing at quite such a rate. So I was playing in a Brighton five-a-side league. And afterwards, surprisingly, we used to go to the pub. And this was back in 2000. And I was trying to explain to them the phenomenon of crazy golf, what it all means. And I was going, "Oh, what you need is like darts, I mean nicknames." And my name dropping was Mike Del Pesh, who came up with the idea of, "What about Big Top Ted?" I thought, what a great name. So yes, John Big Top Ted McKaiser stuck. And I still think it sounds good. I don't know what it means, but it just sounds good. Big Top makes you think of, I don't know, wrestling, taming lions, wrestling crocodiles on the high wire. But then it also makes you think of clowns. So we both aspects of the years.
Can you send us the picture of you and Lofty side by side so we can compare for ourselves?
Yes.
That'd be helpful for the audience.
Big one out, yes.
So what, looking back over your career, is your greatest achievement? It doesn't have to be the tournament with the best score. Just when you look back at your career, what makes you the happiest?
I think it's when I won up at Stratford the British Championship. It was going for like the third year running, and I tied with Tim Iceman Davis. So it was a sudden death playoff, and she went 16 holes.
Wow.
And it was finally, I think he made a mistake and got through. And I just, oh yeah, Tim had just got through. And yeah, one of your earlier guests, was it Alan, was talking about players that go for the hole in one when they shouldn't. And this was a time where I was actually sensible and just trundled the ball up to about the hole and tapped it in. So yeah, that was a great feeling to do it. And actually someone filmed it as we were doing it from the course, posted it up somewhere, but whether it's still around or not, I don't know. But yeah, that was, it was the pressure after two to try and go for the third one, and then the pressure after that of being in the playoff with your greatest rival at the time, and then beating him. That was a great, you really could smirk afterwards with a full smirking face was on.
Yeah,
and of course, Tim always used to drive me home, so it was a great, I could actually sit next to him in the car and go over hole by hole
with great.
Listening to him grind as he ground his teeth.
Yeah, I bet you enjoyed that. I've never heard of a sudden death playoff going on for so long. If any of our listeners know of anything longer, please write in, but that's certainly the longest one I've heard of. Ted, what is your advice for new players? So say you meet someone new to the game and they've already been told to just enjoy it. What else would you say to them? Say if you were stuck in an elevator with them, what would you say to a new player?
Well, actually, I can look at the last tournament I played in Saltash to come up with two bits of advice, which even after all these years, I still didn't do. The last round, I was wasn't that far off the lead. I think I really need to get some aces. And one of the people in the group in front, Ian Witt, played this beautiful shot for an ace. And it's a bit of an undulating course, but there's and he was teeing off from the other side of the tee. I thought, look at that. That's amazing. I mean, you can't really screw this one up. It's just a case of going up and over the hump. So I tried that line. And I ended up with a four.
Right.
Which is even more frustrating because if I'd just played my old shot and got two, I'd have finished third in it. And the other one is don't change your ball during
the... So don't change your line was the first one.
Don't change your line or try a new shot. And the other one is don't change your ball either, which again I did in the first round, second round at Cornwall, because actually it was Ian Witt again. I watched an ace playing a different line of the dead ball. So I asked him about that, and the idea is you play the shot, it hits the rock and it rolls down, and I've been playing a different line completely. So I thought, that looks good. So I hit the ball with a dead ball, but I hadn't realised it turned quite a bit left to right, so it just hit the rock and stopped. So yeah, there's two bits of advice. Don't change your balls and don't try different lines during a tournament. Otherwise, you won't finish in third place.
Okay, and what is your favourite course?
I would say probably the course that's not there anymore would be Clambers. The great times we had on it. It's where I played my first tournament in Hastings on for in BMGA terms. It's where we wrote the book, it's where we ran the place for a while. And I just sort of look back on that, some great happy times, really. There, players that have no longer played with us, players that are no longer with us have also been on the course as well. So I met Yoni as well for the first time. We've sort of been great friends with him since. Yeah, definitely, Clambers.
Okay. And if you could time travel, you can go to any place, forward or backwards, in time, any year you want. And then after you visit this place, you always get to return home, so you don't have to worry about a return trip. But you can only make one trip. You can only visit one time. where would you travel to? Would you go forward or backwards, and where would you go?
I wouldn't mind going to New York, actually, in the 1920s, roaring 20s in New York, when mini golf, crazy golf was a massive, it really became a massive, just before the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd like to go to New York and play all the various courses there, actually, especially the ones that are being held. There's some that were open all night as well. People used to go there after going to turn up in their evening wear and play. And I think some of them as well had all night licenses. So there'd be a nice mixture of playing mini golf and sort of hanging out with the crowd of New York.
Yeah, lovely.
And rubbing shoulders with gangsters as well, because it's quite a bit of the courses were also involved in possible money laundering and other nefarious acts. So, yes, it would be quite an interesting time to be there.
Ted, were hearing about these stories, when you heard about these stories of money laundering going on in New York mini golf courses, is that what inspired you to buy ice creams from Lidl in a multi-pack and then sell them at your own course?
Ice cream laundering.
Ice cream laundering, yeah. Okay, so what is your mini golf hottest take? So imagine you walk into a pub that's filled with mini golf players and you go up to the bar. What's the one opinion you could announce about mini golf that caused the biggest number of turned heads and the biggest number of people coming up to say they disagree with you and that you're a mad person? What's your mini golf hottest take?
My word, there's a question. I suppose I could ask at the moment is which is the best club in Margate?
Right.
I actually get the moment with that situation where you've got, I think it's potentially three clubs all based in Kent. The Kent Mini Golf Club, which is, although dormant, still has, I think, four people in it. And you've got Strokes Mini Golf, who play in Margate. And you've got Planet Mini Golf, who play in Margate. So I think possibly asking which is the best club in Kent would get quite a lively response there.
Yeah, and despite they are three different states as clubs, all of them have had a winner this year.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, and now we've reached the part of the episode where we shine a spotlight onto one of Ted's balls.
That's an interesting phrase, isn't it?
It's time for ball spotlight, Ted. Do you have a ball that you can share with us that's particularly memorable, particularly interesting, maybe a favourite ball?
In a shameless piece of self-advertisement.
Go on.
I'm going to say it was the ball of fame I had after winning my third consecutive British Championship. Which was a delightful purple colour. Mm-hmm. It had some nice font on it with Big Top's head. And it was very, very bouncy. The only downside is that I found after playing it numerous times that it had become a bit worn, a bit wrinkled, a little bit faded. And in fact, it was like myself. Imagine that it was the ball of Dorian Gray rather than the painting and picture of Dorian Gray. So I actually sold it to someone just because if I showed it to someone and said it's my ball of fame, all they would see would be a purple globe with nothing on it. So they just think I'm some sort of madman blabbering away. So, yes, I just sold it and took the money, but it'd be great to get hold of one with the in pristine condition. I know at the time there used to be a group of fellows from Lincoln that used to come down and play at the British Open. and they bought a whole load off me. So if anyone in the Lincoln area is listening and they've seen some of these balls in the British Heart Foundation, please get in touch with me and we can make some sort of business agreement.
So for the benefit of our listeners and Ted, who actually can't see us, but for the benefit of our listeners, Simon is holding up the Ted McIver Big Top Ted ball to the camera at the moment. And it does look rather old and wrinkled, but I won't say anything about that.
Yeah, this is not only the best example I could find, it is the only example I could find. So I have had no choice in the quality. It was this or nothing. But it lives on.
I wonder where they are, because we had 60 made. So they're like Fabergé eggs, aren't they? They're all sort of, they're out there, some the missing Fabergé eggs and the missing Ted balls are somewhere out there in someone's attic. So please, I will put an appeal out to the listeners. Please have a look in your drawers, have a rummage around in the cupboard under the stairs. Check your bags. They've got to be out there somewhere.
And it could be in Pelham Place, lost forever, anything.
Yeah. Or the seagulls have picked it up and it's somewhere in a seagull nest where every year a seagull tries to hatch it. So without actually it happening. I say that because on two occasions I have had my ball taken by a seagull.
Oh.
Brother, that scene in 1 million BC where Raquel Welsh is taken off by some sort of pterodactyl. A seagull has picked up a ball and swooped on it and flown off up onto the cliffs. For those who don't know, the course, there's these cliffs that lead up to the West Hill where a variety of herring gulls nest. So, yes, perhaps that's a perilous adventure of climbing the cliffs and inspecting all the seagull nests. Could be there.
God, that'd be a difficult one to explain to the ambulance, wouldn't it? What were you doing up there? I was looking for the Big Top Ted mini golf ball of fame. But they hear that all the time. Yes. All right, that's it. Ted, I hope you've enjoyed talking to us. I've had an absolutely fantastic time. It's been great hearing some of your stories and looking back over your career. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Have you enjoyed it?
I have, yeah. It's great, obviously, to chat on both. You and Simon, we've played in the same club together and we get great company, whether it's on the mini golf course or after the mini golf tournament in the evening at a restaurant or a bar. It's always great to be chatting to you guys. It's been an absolute pleasure to be chance to have a chat with you.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks, not just for coming on the podcast twice these last few weeks, but for everything you give on and off the course, and certainly in terms of company and companionship to myself. When I joined the tour, you know, from the enclave of Wales, and started making my way over to the infamous Southeast, where all these courses and grand tournaments and fantastic players seemed to be gathered, you were one of the most open and one of the most established yet inclusive. And it stayed that way. And I'm just glad to have you as a friend. And thanks for finally catching up with us in this format. But I look forward to the next time in the pub instead.
Yeah, absolutely. Crazies next year. That's when we'll see each other, hopefully.
Brilliant.
Looking forward to that as well.
Look forward to seeing you guys again.
Cool. Simon, any final words?
No, not at all. It's just I hope anybody listening to this can see Ted's enthusiasm for the game after two decades. And if that's not an advert for, you know, giving the sport a chance and sticking at it to enjoy it for this long and still have the enthusiasm and the tales to come out of it, then what is? So, yeah, it's a nice guest and a nice interview to finish the year on, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that said, all that's left to say is it's goodbye from Ted.
Goodbye.
goodbye from Simon.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.